And welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Dr. TJ. With me, as always, is Aaron. How are you, Aaron?
Great.
Today, we have an exciting show. It's kind of a hot topic. Lots of people are concerned about this topic. Every parent, I think, is one of their big concerns. And that topic is ADD and autism. We're going to kind of talk about what these two things have in common, what they may not have in common, and really kind of some background information on the rise of these conditions in
America. Right. What we think the possible causes are, some things you can do to prevent these problems or to put yourself at lesser of a risk. And if you are someone you know or love is suffering from one of these conditions, what things you can do to help relieve some of the symptoms.
Very well said. Okay. Wonderful. Yes. Wonderful. All right. So ADD, ADHD, when we're going to kind of use those. They're not quite the same exact thing, but we will kind of use those terms synonymously throughout the show today, because some of the research that we will be talking about is referring to ADHD. Some of it is referencing ADD. So this is basically one and the same for all intents and purposes of this show.
They're interchangeable.
We do understand, for those of you out there, we do understand that there is a difference. But for this show, they're going to be basically the same. So one of the big questions is, what's causing the rise in ADD and autism in this country? I mean, the rise of both of these conditions is just astronomical. It's just skyrocketing. I mean, the question is, you know, what's causing it? You know, it's not just genetics or bad luck. There are a lot of other things that play a role. Environmental factors like diet plays a role, despite what conventional medicine says. So today we're basically going to talk about latest research, what the research says about underlying causes of ADHD, ADD, and autism spectrum, and what to do if you or a loved one has been diagnosed. There are a lot of things that can be done and looked into. We just want to provide as much information as we possibly can.
Right. And this is something that comes up so much in the clinic and otherwise. We just get a ton of questions from people over social media and email, because the incidence of ADHD and autism spectrum disorder, ESD, has risen so dramatically in the past decade. And I think we all know that. I mean, I think almost
there are billboards that talk about it.
Right. I mean, exactly. There's just, we didn't see this 20, 30 years ago. And now I think everyone knows someone who has been affected by one of these two conditions.
Right. Everyone. You're exactly right. The CDC states that 11% of children have been diagnosed with ADHD, and that constitutes a 42% increase in the last 8 years alone. I mean, that's astronomical rates of increase.
Right. Well, I mean, and on top of that, it says about 6% of kids are now taking medication for ADHD.
Right.
And males are 3 times more likely than females to be diagnosed with ADHD.
Right.
And actually, 6% sounds low to me, and maybe that's just who we end up, you know, who ends up coming into the clinic. But we see a huge number of people, you know, of children who've been diagnosed with ADHD or autism.
Right. In a class of 30, that means 2 will have this diagnosis. Is that right? Isn't that right? Is that the math?
I don't know why you try to do math.
I don't know. I don't either. I want to be a mathematician, and I'm really not.
No, it's not your strong suit.
No, it's not. Maybe it's 1.5. I don't know. How do you get a half a kid? I don't know. Okay, so one of the big things is environmental factors play a role. If a 42% increase in 8 years cannot possibly be due to genetics alone, that all of the mainstream research out there, they're trying to push, and all these media outlets are trying to push and say, well, it's genetic. Our genes don't change that fast.
Right. No, exactly.
It's just insanity to think that it's genetic, that there's no possible way that we can have that much of a mutation or change in our genetic makeup in the course of 8 freaking years
right.
that we have a 42% increase.
Right. And that's definitely necessarily true. I mean, we're going to talk a little later in the show about the fact that we're not saying genetics don't play any role.
Right. They play some role.
Right. They do. It's just not, genetics aren't 100% responsible for this.
Right. I mean,
really, I think one of the main problems and the whole reason we're doing a show on this is that nothing is 100% responsible for this.
Right. And it's, what's sad is if you go to good old Dr. Google, because I think everybody's been Dr. Google.
Yep.
I'm pretty certain of it. If you type anything like that in autism or ADHD or ADD in, basically they're going to tend to tell you that it's a genetic predisposition. But otherwise, they don't really understand any causes.
Right.
That just makes zero sense to me.
But I mean, that's the way that mainstream medicine is, though. If
right.
we don't have one cause, then there is no cause. If they can't point to one thing that's causing all of these people, you know, this, you know, increase in ADHD or increase in autism, then there isn't a cause. But
right.
the truth of the matter is that autism and ADD, ADHD, like basically every other condition, every condition has multiple causes. I mean, any sort of chronic condition anyway.
Right. And so the other thing, you know, some of these websites out there go out of their way to say diet isn't an issue.
Well, it's that diet has never been shown to be a cause.
Well,
I mean,
they're trying to say the same thing.
Basically. But I mean, saying diet has never been shown to be the cause. Nothing has been proven to be the cause because
right.
there isn't one cause. It's the same thing we've talked about with, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia. I mean, they say, well, we don't really know. But the issue is that there is not one cause. So if we keep looking for one cause, we're never going to get it right.
Yeah. And what's crazy here, I mean, this is just another of the bajillion different examples where...
Is that a bajillion?
Yeah, it's a
not a... Sorry, no, go ahead.
Now Liz is laughing at me too. This isn't even fair.
Well, no,
yes.
It's an approximation. I guess.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Approximation.
Well, I rounded up.
Yes.
I took the decimal point and rounded up.
Yeah.
This is what I put up with, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning in for the first time, I'm Dr. TJ, and that's smart aleck Aaron over there who makes fun of me on a regular basis.
Okay, what was your point?
I don't even remember now. You took me all off course. I'm completely lost.
We were talking about mainstream medicine and them and
a
about
bajillion?
Environmental,
yeah, there's
environmental factors.
So where I was going with that, I think, was that this is an example, again, of mainstream medicine being a bit out of touch, even with their own research.
Right.
I mean, they're starting to get on board with what we've been talking about for years, that there are environmental factors. Diet plays a role. Gut plays a role. They're starting to get on board, and their research is showing it, but yet all of their publication out there and all the information that you go find on the web is completely opposite of that. Like, oh, no, there's no connection. No
right,
connection.
Right, but peer-reviewed... You know, published research over the past.
What was that? Did you have much trouble with that?
You're calling me out on that.
Ladies and gentlemen, TJ 1, Aaron 5 million.
The research that has, you know, peer reviewed published research over the past 10 to 20 years.
Say that 10 times fast.
Let me go.
Oh, okay.
Has shown that, I mean, there is some truth to the fact that environmental factors play a role. This is not all genetic.
Right. It can't be. We our genes don't adapt this quickly. There's no possible way that it can be
right.
genetic. There has to be other factors.
So it doesn't make sense that the research shows, you know, exactly what we've been saying, which is why we have this show. It's, you know, what we're talking about are the, you know, science-based medicine, what the actual research is showing. And if you look at articles by conventional medicine doctors, they will say things like, you know, well, we don't have any proof that the environmental factors are having any impact on ADHD or autism.
Right, exactly. So
if they've just read their own research, they would be a lot more up to date.
Yeah, right. I know.
Because we're
just
actually
so you know
reading
out
the research.
Research is behind. Research
yes.
is always behind clinical experience. It's behind years, and it's getting farther and farther away. So eventually it's going to be, you know, you're in the right clinician's office or you're behind.
Right. Well, and I think that there are a lot of mainstream doctors who are starting to jump on board with this because,
right.
like you said, they're seeing it in their own practice. So while it may be opposite of what they were taught when they were in medical school, they're starting to see, oh, wait, what I was taught to do isn't making any difference. These
right.
people aren't getting better.
Right. That's exactly right. So when we have ADD, ADHD, autism, we're basically talking about some brain malfunction. All right. So there was a paper that was written out there that it's relevant to ADHD, even though ADHD wasn't the real true topic of the paper, for lack of a better term. The paper was really trying to look at what some of the causes of autism were, but the title's pretty cool. So the title of this paper was called "The Enteric Ecosystem Disruption in Autism Spectrum Disorder. Can the Microbiota and Macrobiota Be Restored?" That's a mouthful. But basically what it's saying is that can the gut have a role in this brain malfunctions and these different brain malfunctions that can happen? And I mean, what we see over and over again, overwhelming answer is yes. The overwhelming answer is yes. There are things that all of these conditions share in common. That's just the way it is.
Right.
I mean, they're starting to, we're hearing more and more about it. We're hearing more about the gut-brain connection. I mean, we finally had a commercial, a Super Bowl or two ago, that was talking about probiotics and immune function and keeping the gut healthy, because that's where 80% of your immune system lives. And I've had people coming into the office that were just blown away. Like, did you know 80% of your immune system is in your... Yes, remember?
We've been saying that for a long time.
When I drew it up on the whiteboard, and we talked about how this is where your immune system is, and this is where your nervous system is, and all your neurotransmitters are made here, and how important gut health is.
Right. And the authors of the paper that you had referenced talk about what they call the biome depletion hypothesis and a three-hit paradigm that goes along with that. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back from the break, because I know we need to take a short break here. You're listening to Wellness 101.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning in, today's topic on the lovely Wellness 101 show is ADD and autism. And if you're just tuning in, we're using ADD and ADHD synonymously throughout. We do know that they are two different conditions. It's okay. We're just talking about some research that goes on, and some research is for ADD, some is for ADHD, and we're just kind of using them both synonymously. We know they're different conditions. But before the break, we were talking about this paper that was written titled "Enteric Ecosystem Disruption in Autism Spectrum Disorder. Can the Microbiota and Macrobiota Be Restored?" And Aaron had mentioned that the authors of this study talk about biome depletion, and there's like three parts to this. One of them is biome depletion. The second one is an environmental stimulus. And the third one is a genetic or epigenetic predisposition. So let's talk about each of those briefly. I say briefly. Briefly ends up being four shows.
Well, yeah. A little more briefly than that.
Yeah.
Let's go through these.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, I just want to throw out there, I say, yeah, we're going to do this quickly. And I'm like, oh, let me take us a little off track.
Yeah.
But really, these, I mean, we're talking about this in terms of ADHD and autism, but actually these three are applicable to a lot of
almost every condition you can think of.
Yeah.
It's so applicable to everything.
Right. But in this context, let's go over the three and kind of what we found.
So the first one with biome depletion, basically the hypothesis of biome depletion says that, you know, there are alterations in the microbiome, and it's because we are increasing our hygiene. We're trying to kill more organisms, and we don't host as many organisms as we used to. We've killed off a bunch of different bugs. We've killed off some parasites that used to be a part of the human microbiome. We've killed off these things called helminths and other organisms and things that we co-evolved with over, you know, hundreds of thousands of years that we've been around. So these things helped to regulate our immune system. And if they're no longer there, our immune system can go off track and go haywire. And so this is kind of key, because some researchers out there and authors out there and opinion leaders think that since we've lost these organisms, that this is contributing to part of the increase in autoimmune diseases and things like autism spectrum disorder and ADHD, because these organisms work so closely together with the rest of our body that when we get rid of them, the stability is lost.
Right. No, exactly. I mean, the idea is that there are changes to our environment, the changes to our environment disrupt the microbiome in a way that leads to a lack of immune competence, essentially.
Right. Our immune system just kind of goes kaput.
Right.
And I mean, we see this every day in the clinic. This is one of the big things we talk about. The immune system is so important. It's one of the most important, if not, in my opinion, the most important thing going on in the body, because if the immune system is mad, you're inflamed, you've got big problems.
Right. And that in turn can affect the brain and increase the risk of autoimmune disease, autism spectrum disorder, ADHD, and a lot of other problems.
Right. Maybe that's what happened to my brain when I said bajillion earlier. Liz laughed entirely too hard at that joke. So she's starting to hurt my feelings a little. Uh-oh, she's getting the microphone. Look out.
I just really like the word bajillion.
It's a great word.
I was going to say, it didn't just come out of nowhere. No. This is not the first time he's used that.
Yeah. Bajillion makes me laugh.
Bajillion. Too funny. All right, so biome depletion is one. The second one is an environmental stimulus. So an environmental stimulus can be so many things. Most people, when they think about our environment, they think about the birds and the trees and the water and stuff like that. I'm talking about even more than that. Our environment is way bigger. A big chunk of our environment is diet and the foods that we eat. That alters our environment. Things like eating massive amounts of sugar, sugar is dry leaves on a fire. It's going to inflame you. Not having enough nutrients in our body, like vitamin D deficiency. I mean, we've talked before in this show, a couple weeks ago, we had a show, two parts on vitamin D. And we talked about how the national average of vitamin D is deficient, medically deficient. And to think that that doesn't play a role in our overall health is just ludicrous.
Can I bring something up?
Yeah.
I just want to jump back. You just had talked about diet being like
environmental.
Well, like throwing, what was it, dry leaves
on a fire. Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's a great way to look at it. What we have is, you know, if you say there, you know, if you happen to have some sort of genetic predisposition, maybe you have this like tiny little like match flame of a fire going on that, and then you pour all of this sugar and all of this processed food on top of it that are all of these, you know, dry leaves, and it's so much easier to blame that little tiny flame that started instead of just, you know, stop pouring dry leaves on top of it. It makes absolutely no sense, but it's because that takes more of a change.
But the research out there, the publications say that diet doesn't matter, so.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of people would like to believe that diet doesn't matter because diet, I mean, it's a simple thing. I mean, you know, like it's a simple concept to not eat processed foods and tons of sugar, but it's not easy to change.
Right. It's hard. People really get scared when you take away some of the nutrients that they've, or nutrients. It's not nutrients. I misspoke there, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize. Well, we'll take this break for station identification because I messed that up. These calories that people are consuming, these processed food stuffs that are calories, that when you take those away, they freak out because people don't know how to cook as much anymore. They don't know what to do. And so when you say, hey, you know, these are things that you need to stop eating, they don't know what to do.
Right.
It's so hard for them. But once they make the shift and start seeing the change, it becomes so natural. And then they come in, you know, 6 months, a year later, like I look at all this change. I'm so excited. I look at everything that's happened, and you know, eating healthy helps.
Right.
But they've got to know what to eat.
Exactly.
Just telling someone eat healthier doesn't mean anything.
Well, I know we talk about that so much on the show, but it is crazy, especially since we're talking about ADHD and autism, which generally when we're dealing with that, we're talking with parents who have children who are dealing with those issues, even though it's not, you know, I mean, certainly not just children. But it's amazing how we see entire families get along so much better when they start eating healthier. It's
right.
All of these things that were causing problems between them, you know, behavioral issues and, you know, the and anger and, you know.
What was our Facebook post the other day? Don't blame the bacon for what the biscuit
did.
check out our Facebook post, ladies and gentlemen. It's true. Don't blame the bacon for what the biscuit did. It's processed stuff.
Right.
I'm not going to lie. Biscuits are delicious, but they're definitely not healthy for you.
Right.
It's not a good choice.
All right. So we talked about diet, vitamin D deficiency. There's also excess exposure to antibiotics.
Antibiotics is a huge one. I mean, every parent that takes their kid to the doctor, they're like, oh my gosh, give them an antibiotic. What do they have? Oh, I don't know. It's an ear infection. Well, ear infections are almost all viral.
Right.
Antibiotics don't work. Or they have a cold, or they have the flu. And a lot of flu, the influenza virus, your antibiotics aren't going to help that. I mean, it's mind-boggling that we're just throwing antibiotics after antibiotics. And even the, I forget what organizations put it out. It might have been the pediatrics. It might have just been family practice that put it out here a few years ago, warning doctors or urging doctors, do not prescribe antibiotics for ear infections in children. It doesn't work. It hasn't helped. But yet we still see massive amounts of antibiotics prescribed for ear infections.
Right. Well, they don't know what else to do. I mean, they don't have, I mean, and that's one of the great things about our clinic and a lot of clinics that are, you know, practicing functional medicine. It's certainly not just ours, but they have all of these different ways of treating these problems that don't involve antibiotics. Because like we've said a million times on this show, parents aren't giving their kids antibiotics because they want to harm them or they are trying to find the easy way out. I don't believe that that's, you know, if it's ever true, it's extremely rare.
Right.
I think parents are trying to do what they think is right. And, you know, they're going to pediatrician because pediatricians are supposed to be the experts on this and to know what to do. And if a pediatrician says you need an antibiotic, you give your child an antibiotic generally.
Right.
But unfortunately, we know that that causes a ton of other problems. And a lot of times antibiotics are not necessary.
Right. And the antibiotics, they kill the bad bugs, but they kill the good bugs too.
And we need the good bugs.
We got to have the good bugs. We're made up of good bugs.
Right.
And that's what makes up our gut, and which is in turn makes up our immune system, which is also making up our neurotransmitters. It's how our nervous system communicates, how our nerves communicate. It's how we feel good. It's how we fall asleep. It's how we stay asleep. It's how we be happy. It's how we, you know, handle stress. All of these things matter.
Well, and so, another part of this whole environmental stimulus, and I know we were talking about antibiotics, is acetaminophen exposure.
Yeah, Tylenol. Oh, boy. Didn't we have a craze here not too long? I mean, I'm kind of out of it because this is not my realm. But didn't they pull all acetaminophen containing products off the shelf, or they pulled something like that off the shelf for children? Walmart's, Target's, CVS, Walgreens, everybody had to pull something that was a children's medication that people had been giving for a long time. I mean, this is real stuff. I don't remember exactly what it was, and it doesn't matter. The problem is that we're giving too many medications to our children.
Right.
Acetaminophen is extremely toxic for the liver.
And it's used quite a bit in kids.
Yeah. Oh, they got a fever. Give them some Tylenol.
Oh, and pregnant women. Oh, yeah, Tylenol's fine. Oh, yeah, no, take Tylenol. Tylenol isn't going to hurt you at all. Yeah, I mean, it makes absolutely no sense.
It's only one of the leading causes of liver failure in the country.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just, I don't know. All right. When we come back, we've got to take another quick break. When we come back, we will discuss factor three of this, which is the genetic and epigenetic predisposition. We'll be right back. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning in today on Wellness 101, we're talking about autism and ADD, ADHD. It's been a very good show so far. I've only been made fun of once, so it's maybe twice. So that's very good. And Aaron's just looking at me now. That's been an entertaining show. So before the break, we were talking about this biome depletion, and we talked about an environmental stimulus, and these are things that are leading to this hypothesis that, you know, is leading the charge, I guess. This hypothesis is leading the charge or spearheading the charge of why we're seeing this rise in ADD, ADHD, and autism spectrum disorder. And so we talked about biome depletion and basically losing bugs that we used to have on our bodies. So our hygiene has gotten so much better, but yet we've killed off all these good bugs. Two was environmental stimulus. Those are things like bad diet, not just the air and water around us. Things like vitamin deficiencies, exposure to antibiotics, taking acetaminophen, these types of things that can create a part of the problem. And then lastly is our genetic and epigenetic predisposition. So we talked earlier in the show, I'm like, you know, this ADHD has risen 42% in the last 8 years, the incidence of it has. And I was kind of went off on a rant talking about how our genes don't change that fast. So it can't be just our genes. I still stand by that statement. However, we can have a genetic predisposition. We can get things from a parent that predisposes us to problems. But not all kids have ADHD. Not all kids have autism. Even if they do have disruption of their gut flora, if their microbiota and their gut is damaged, that doesn't mean that they're going to have these issues. So why do we have some children that get the problem, and why do we have some children that don't? So this is the part where our genetics and our epigenetics come in. Like I said, it's kind of a predisposition. Your genetics can predispose you. You're more likely to have an issue if these other factors are there too.
Right. And we do, you know, I mean, I'm sure everyone has heard about genetic testing, and there are tests that you can do that, you know, can to determine this. And we do quite a bit of genetic testing in our office. So that is definitely a part of it. It doesn't mean that you are going to get these conditions.
Right. So there's just a lot of things that can trigger what this is that's going on in kids. There are so many things. And this is where I completely understand mainstream medicine and the mainstream media talking about, you know, well, we don't know what causes it. You're right. We don't know a single cause, but we know a bunch of things that contribute to it. And if we can't have a conversation about the bunch of things that contribute to it, we're basically going to be left in the Stone Age. We're going to be scratching our head when the incident gets to 1 in 2 children, which is what's predicted by like 2025 or something crazy like that, 2050, whatever it is. 1 out of every 2 children born, they're predicting to have autism.
Right.
If we just sit here and say, well, we don't know what's causing it, and put our heads in the sand, we're going to be in a world of hurt.
Right. And we've got to at least, you know, look at, okay, what has changed in the past, you know, 20 years? Because so what things could be pointing to this, and, you know, what the research has shown us, I mean, our environment has changed. You know, our diets have changed. The use of antibiotics have changed. I mean, the things that we've talked about, and our guts are messed up.
Right.
Even at a really early age.
The rate of medication use is just skyrocketing. I mean, it's just insane how much more medication our children are using today compared to even when I was a kid.
Right.
You know, that was only, a few years ago.
Right. But, no, I mean, yeah.
You know, it's a very, very, very short period of time ago.
Doogie.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Well, for now I have to feel better. Makes up for the bajillion.
Yeah. So, I mean, our whole point with this is, like I said, that we, you know, we do genetic testing. But if you look at the other two factors that we talked about, the environmental stimulus and the microbiome depletion, then those are things that need to be addressed anyway. Just because you have a genetic predisposition doesn't mean you're going to have these conditions. And just because you don't have a genetic predisposition doesn't mean that you should be eating a bunch of sugar and and processed foods and not worry about your gut, because it may not lead to these specific problems, but it's going to lead to a problem. So they all need to be addressed.
Yeah. So there's some other stuff that goes behind this. There's another theory out there. I find this theory kind of fascinating. It's a theory called the propionic acid theory. And propionic acid is a short chain fatty acid that our gut microbiota make. And this is interesting because we do some stool testing on our patients. So we send them home with a kit to collect, to do the stool test. And we look at a bunch of different things. And one of the things that's looked at is the balance of short chain fatty acids. And this balance can tell us if a person's gut is inflamed. So let me just paint this little picture for you so you can get an idea of what I'm talking about. If your digestive tract, which is, you know, mouth to the other end, is supposed to be how we break down, digest, absorb, assimilate, process, and then be able to eventually utilize nutrients. And it's on fire because it's inflamed. Do you think we're really going to absorb the nutrients that we need to keep our body in peak physical condition? I'll help you out. The answer is no, we're not. The more inflamed a gut is, the more we're going to have problems. And, you know, I tell this to patients. This was one of my mentors that said this. We cannot trust the gut of a sick person. If you're inflamed and your gut's inflamed, you're going to have a really, really difficult time if you're just expecting to get all of the nutrients that your body needs from the food that you're consuming. It doesn't happen because we just don't do a very good job. We are not efficient at breaking down, digesting, absorbing, and assimilating materials from our food. We're just not. This is why we end up with waste products. We are not good at assimilating this stuff. And so this propionic acid theory, propionic acid is like I said, is this short chain fatty acid that the bacteria of our gut make. We have different ones. There's another one out there called butyrate. And we really pay attention closely to these two things because butyrate, on one hand, if we have plenty of it, it's very anti-inflammatory. It helps regulate and modulate our immune system, which means it helps to balance it out. When our gut's inflamed, our immune system is all mad and angry and it's not functioning well. And whereas propionic acid is the exact opposite of this. We see elevated levels of propionic acid in people that have problems. This stuff messes with your metabolism. It messes with your ability to absorb food. It messes with your immune function and the pathways of your immune system. It changes how we express genes. And when we have gene expression, that's part of our epigenetics. This is part of what can change your genetics. Genetics are these set in stone things, but we have epigenetics that can alter your genetic makeup. So just because you have a gene that says you're going to have condition X, unless the light switch for that gene is turned on for that gene to actually express condition X, you will never get that problem. The problem comes when something happens in the body, and say it's a gut inflammation thing. It's not always, but say that's the trigger and you have massive amounts of gut inflammation. Then that switch gets flipped. Now you got a problem. Now we got to do absolutely everything we can and hope that we can flip that switch off.
Right.
And this is where, you know, genetic testing can come in handy, but we're not testing every gene at this point. There's 25,000 of them.
Right.
We're not testing them all. We don't even know exactly what they all mean. We don't know what they all mean when they're in conjunction. We don't know if gene, you know, 18,000 has anything to do with gene 2,000. We may find this out 200-300 years down the road when we have retrospective studies to look at it. But in reality, we can't tell you what's going on. What we can do is we can look at, are you inflamed? Do you have high levels of propionic acid? Do you have, you know, low levels of butyrate? These are things that we can look at and say, you know what? We've got a big stinking problem here if we don't get this under control quickly.
Right. And there are definitely ways that genetic testing can help because it can tell you if you're predisposed to certain things. But like we said before, you know, that isn't the, you know, end all be all of tests because there are still some other things that you need to be looking at and things that you should be caring about anyway. I mean, we all probably know or have heard of families where, you know, there's five or six siblings and all but one got cancer. And you're thinking, okay, well, that's genetic, right? You know, what did the, you know, or they all got cancer, but, you know, I mean, say there's one that didn't. Well, did they just not get the same genes? Probably not. I mean, that's always a possibility depending on, you know, how the genes were transferred from the parents. But I think that, you know, a big part of that is what their environment looked like.
Right. You know, all five of them were the five that had the problem raised in a house longer than the one who didn't?
Right.
Did they move? Did they live around, you know, a toxic waste dump? Did they live around, you know, I don't know if power lines have a big deal or not. I mean, they made a whole movie of there in Brockovich on it, but you know, so many things that play a role.
Yes. Nutrient deficiencies, there's smoking plays a role, you know, what their diet consists of. I mean, if they may have all eaten the same basic diet when they were younger, but if one of them started eating all natural, healthy, organic food once they reached adulthood, they may have cut off their, you know, that predisposition
right.
to develop cancer. I mean, so while there is some truth to these things being genetic, that is not, you know, that doesn't have to be a life sentence. That doesn't have to be what happens.
Right. So when we come back, I want to finish up talking about this propionic acid theory. We have to take a quick break. And then I want to talk about this other theory and idea called cell danger and the response that we have when our cells feel like they're in danger. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just tuning in, you've missed one whale of a show. We've been talking about ADD and autism and some research that's been written, rise in incidents that we've seen, 42% increase in the last 8 years of ADHD. We also know the autism rates are skyrocketing. It's just crazy. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about how a lot of the mainstream information that's out there is trying to blame or say that we don't know what the cause is. And I kind of went on a rant before the last break talking about how, well, of course, we don't know what the cause is, but we know a group of things that are factors in the cause. And so until we have a conversation that involves the group of things, we're never going to have any kind of answer. And we're still going to be standing here scratching our heads 30 years from now saying, well, why in the world do we have one in two kids with these problems? And because that's what the predictions are at the current rate. If we don't figure something out and fix it, we have to change course quickly. This is desperation time. And, you know, this is fourth quarter. We're down by six and we've got the ball on the opponent's 80
right.
or on the, we're 80 yards away on the opponent's 20 or on our own 20, whatever the language is there. You know what I mean? We got a long way to go and no time to get there.
No, exactly.
Smokey and the Bandit out there. That's right. Brought in a 1970s movie. Yes. All right. So before the break, we were talking about this propionic acid theory. And so propionic acid, if you missed it, it's a short chain fatty acid that our gut bacteria make. There are others. One of the other ones that we make is butyrate. Propionic acid is very inflammatory. It causes all kinds of problems with our gut. And butyrate is kind of the opposite of that. It's very anti-inflammatory and very good for us. So there is a researcher out there. I believe it's going on in Canada. Don't hold me to that, but I think it's in Canada where these researchers are injecting propionic acid into brains of rats and mice. And I know all you animal lovers out there, that's disheartening, but this is the sort of research that we have to find because we can't just do this stuff on people. But when they do this, what they're finding is that these rats and mice exhibit behavior of rats and mice that would have autism spectrum disorder. So that's pretty important. It's pretty profound. To me, this is just another reason how gut flora and our gut microbiome is, if it gets disrupted, it creates all kinds of brain function problems that would include things like autism, ADHD, Parkinson's.
Right. Well, at least those types of behaviors.
Right.
You know,
those
I mean, not of necessarily. Of course, we're not able to diagnose autism in a mouse.
Right.
But I mean, you know, we can say that they're exhibiting the behaviors
right.
of those certain conditions.
Right.
And that's, you know, the best that we have as far as research right now. And I think it's something that certainly needs to be considered.
Right. So we have to we've got to be looking at this sort of stuff. We have to applaud these researchers that are out there. And my hat's off to you out there that are doing it. This is key work, because this is going to help to find one of the things that is contributing to this. We have to talk about these contributing factors. We can't put all of our eggs in one basket, because there are other things too. It's not just propionic acid. You know, it's the horrible food that we're eating. It's the, you know, all these other things. So I also said before the break that when we came back, we were going to talk about this cell danger response. And this is very interesting to me. This is one that I understand. So the cell danger response, this is research that's going on out in California. This is basically an adapted response. This is a learned response from a cell that is perceiving danger or threats or, you know, something going on with it. So we can talk about this in terms of stress for people. So we'll talk about that in just a second. So these adapted responses are typically, they're normal, typical responses that happen when we perceive a threat. It's perfectly normal as a human if we are perceiving a threat that we go into fight or flight mode. Our pupils get big, our heart rate picks up, the blood flows right to our muscles, it leaves our digestive tract and goes to our muscles, and we're ready to either fight for our lives or run for our lives. That's a perfectly normal response. And it's supposed to happen very short term, just seconds, just to get us away from danger. But what happens when our body gets stuck in that state and we get stuck in that response? That's when we have cell danger. This adapted response has become a long-term thing. That's very, very problematic. Does that make sense, Aaron, what I'm explaining
there?
Okay. So, you know, if we think about this evolutionarily, and we're out, you know, thousands of years ago, and we're walking along, and all of a sudden we run into mean old saber-toothed tiger, we've got to be equipped to get away quickly. But that's great. It's wonderful that we have that response. But when that thing becomes chronic, we don't have those types of dangers anymore. But yet we stress ourselves, we stress our bodies, we create these things where we're in that state all the time. And when that happens, we have all kinds of problems that happen long term. Our body just starts to break down. Our hormones get out of balance. Our cells can't talk to each other the way we're supposed to. Our need for nutrients skyrockets, but yet we don't really eat anything because, like I said, when we're in this state, our blood flow goes away from our intestines and our gut, so our digestion gets all messed up because it's out with our muscles. And so all of these things contribute to big problems.
Right.
All of that, and she had right to say. So all of this stuff matters because it alters how we consume oxygen. It alters how we reduce and oxidize things for our metabolism. It changes the fluidity of our membranes of our cells. It changes how we make fats in our body. It changes how we fold up proteins. And when we fold up proteins, that can alter if we do that incorrectly, we can alter our DNA with that. It talks to our vitamin need. Our vitamin need when we're stressed skyrockets. And we know this is true. We need way more vitamins when we're stressed. We need way more hormones when we're stressed. If someone is super stressed, type A, they're going to need a lot more of everything than your average person is going to need. And when we're stuck in that situation, we have a problem. And when we destroy our cells and our cells have gone into this danger response, we've just broken our entire body down. All of our trillions of cells are no longer working the way they're supposed to. So that affects, in the long term, that affects our mitochondria. Our mitochondria are what make all of our energy for our cell. That's our powerhouse of our cell. And mitochondria have been shown over and over and over again to be common mechanisms of problems in people that have autism, people that have ADD, ADHD, and pretty much any condition that you can think of. Mitochondrial function is a big, big deal.
Right. So this really gets down to, you know, very tiny aspects of us that we can see being changed and resulting in these sort of disorders.
Right. So that's about all the time we have for today's show. We're actually going to make this a two-parter because
right,
we didn't get through everything that we wanted
to talk
about.
Well, we didn't get into, you know, what things you can actually do if you're dealing with this and, you know, things that need to be investigated.
Yeah, key areas to pay attention to. We can talk about that. We can talk about that next week. So tune in. Make sure you check out the show next week.
Right. And if you have questions about ADHD or autism, certainly send them our way and we'll try to incorporate that into the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's about all the time we have. Visit our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. Call us 314-293-8123. We are happy to answer your calls and questions. For Wellness 101 and Aaron, this is Dr. TJ. Thanks for listening.